anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're welcome along to the Ryan Line. It is Nathan and Shane with you as ever on a Thursday. How are you, Shane?
I'm good. The Winter Olympics are starting. I'm watching curling, mixed doubles curling already. They've got that going. I love the Olympics. This is a very happy time for me.
I didn't realize that they've done that newfangled Olympics thing where they started before the opening ceremony. So is curling underway is what you're telling me. I love the curling.
The mixed doubles curling has started, yeah.
Yes.
This is, I think, the only thing. I think the rest is just practice runs at, you know, the alpine skiing and practice skating and stuff. But yeah, the U.S., I'm watching a replay of the U.S. and Norway right now. No spoilers if you know it. But yeah, mixed doubles curling is very weird. It's a weird one. You know, the men sweep on every turn. I don't really like that.
Do you feel that the Winter Olympics is a victim of modern viewing habits in that the younger generation won't have the same interest as we have for it, or the same novelty interest? See, it's different in America because ye are, you know, successful at it and you will win medals, whereas we're sending four competitors, I'm going to say, and you know, we don't have any snow, right, which is makes life difficult for us when it comes to the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
But for me growing up, I always loved the Winter Olympics because, again, it was one of the few things sports-wise that was on TV. So I would sit down and, you know, do that thing where, oh, the biathlon, I've watched this for 6 hours straight now today, and I'm an expert, and I'm judging these guys who've worked their entire life for this, or the skiing, or the curling. Like, I'm staying up till midnight watching the curling because Scotland are great
at it. Yeah.
Whereas now the kids are like, nah, I'll just go back and watch YouTube. I don't need to put up with this nonsensical sport.
That would be such a shame because it's our generational thing. Like, I have such good memories of growing up watching the Olympics. When I first started writing for Grantland, I would write these back before everybody was doing this and better than me. I would write these comprehensive viewing guides where I would figure out where every single medal sport, every single American competing in teams, and I'd make this whole huge color-coded spreadsheet. I just love it. I love everything about it. So on one hand, what they do now with the streaming, like here on Peacock, it's like you can watch any event, you can get any feed, it's very easy. So it's easier to watch than ever, but I think you're right, which is that the communal viewing experience is probably much less than it once was. Because really, realistically, I don't know if this was like this for you, but when I was a kid, what I remember most is like the NBC primetime stuff that we would watch. You know, everybody would sit down and it was the schmaltziest, probably worst coverage you've ever seen compared to, you know, how spoiled we are now. But it was like, yeah, everybody sit around watching the swimming in the summer.
Well, it meant that when you went to school the next day, everybody else had been watching the same thing because there was no other option.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, God. The Olympics is the last pure thing. You know what I mean? And also, something for your people to look out for.
My people.
If you want a vicarious sort of your people, white men, Irish people. The tensions between U.S. and Canada right now politically, if there is a gold medal hockey game on the men's side between the U.S. and Canada, it's going to be insane, especially like for Canadians. And I think everybody in the whole world, everybody in the whole world outside the U.S. will be rooting for Canada.
Well, I was just going to ask, considering the current political state, if it is the USA against Canada, who are you going to be cheering for?
Are you finding it more difficult
to get behind the flag?
The Olympics is typically one of the few things where I just let myself sort of, you know, just be really jingoistic. You know, you don't have to get to know these athletes very well, unlike other sports, so you don't have time to like figure out what terrible people they are usually. And so it's like, yeah, I just root for the Americans. So I probably pull for the Americans, but considering how shitty it would be for the Canadians to lose this particular gold medal game, I would kind of be okay if they won, I think.
Okay. I should let the listeners in on a developing part of our relationship and me getting a greater insight into you as a person. So I have joined your season-long golf pool. I don't know if this was something you've done before, but I always like anything this. I'm, you know, obsessed with all fantasy sports, all of that sort of stuff. So I liked the way it was sort of, it's sort of a one and done in that I had to pick a winner of every tournament across the year before the season started, and you could only pick everybody once. And there's a couple of other little bits in there, but that's the main gist of it. I'm mainly bringing it up because, oh, sorry, and then there's 32 tournaments. You rank them in terms of importance, 4, 3, 2, 1. And so the 8 that you rank as importance 4, you get 4 times the amount of points. So if you win, you get 128 points. Or if it's ranked 1, you get 32 points. But you get to decide which tournaments you rank as more important.
Exactly. Yep.
The reason I'm obviously bringing this up is I picked Justin Rose to win last week and had it as a tier 4 tournament. Yeah. So I got full points. The only one, 128 points. Justin Rose, God bless you.
This is the first time we've ever done this. And that, I'm calling that the maximum in like a little maybe nod to darts or whatever. You're the first ever maximum in the Green Asylum pool.
Wow.
So, yeah, this is huge.
But I thought this was cool, Shane. I was like, this is good. I can get on board with this. And then I get an email yesterday going, you're doing a Winter Olympics one, which was, without doubt, the most convoluted pool I have ever... By the end of it, I was like, I kind of want to enter this just to see if I can fluke my way to victory. Because, dear God, what the hell was happening with it?
Can I defend it very quickly? Because I do think this is the funniest and best pool I've ever invented. So this was years ago. We've done it since, I think, at least 2014. My friend Spike and I were like, we like to come up with fun pools, but we like to have a twist. And we were like, what's the worst thing you could do for an Olympics pool? And it was like, you have to do an Olympics pool where you get people to root against the Americans. And so we called it, this was the initial philosophy. It's like, how do we do that? And we called it the Great Satan Pool in honor of, you know, our nickname in Iran or maybe in the entire world now. But the idea is that you have to pick 15 winners. It's kind of simple. As I give the most convoluted explanation you've ever heard. No, you pick 15 winners from 15 different sports and you put them in priority order. And they have to be one from each country only. Can't pick the US. But this is the Great Satan twist. If any of them get beat by an American on the medal podium, you lose points based on how high the priority is and how well the American does. And so it's like, what happened immediately was we were in a road race, and this was like the 2012 Summer Olympics or 2014 Summer Olympics, and some American came out of nowhere to win a gold medal that wasn't favored. Well, everybody had picked the Dutch who were favored, and it was the road race, and we had an email thread back before we had Slack or anything, and it was like, you've never seen an email thread on Gmail explode more. It was like 50 new emails from people going, no, it ruined people's pools. And it was like instantly, this is exactly, it ruined people's enjoyment of what should have been a great Olympic moment. And my friend and I were like, this is hilarious. We did it.
How much time does it take you to run this?
Well, so I don't run them anymore. My friend Scott, who runs Green Asylum, he's an expert with spreadsheets. And so he does them.
Are we paying him? Is he taking a cut?
He just likes it, man. We all just like it. We're sick people. No, nobody, no pool I've ever run. I've never taken a cut from any pool I've run on principle. But yeah, like, so this yesterday took me, I think, 2 hours to research and do. But in my life now, Nathan, I can't do season-long fantasy sports. I flake out within, no kidding, like 10 days I flake out. So it has to be these pools where you do have to put a little time in up front, but then you don't have to do anything the rest of the year.
No, I'm very invested in my fantasy football, which is Fantasy Premier League. So spend way too much time on that.
Yeah.
Fantasy European Tour, I am all over.
Interesting.
And it's actually a brilliant way, not that I should be endorsing this, it's a brilliant way of a bit of research for betting purposes. Because you're so you have to pick 4 or 6 golfers every week. And you really start tracking, okay, this guy now is doing a little bit more. The problem with a lot of the fantasy betting at the moment, our fantasy games, is they're becoming too convoluted and too time intensive. So again, the European Tour one, you can update your team after every round.
It's tough. I can't do that.
Stage, I shouldn't admit this, but last week on the European Tour, they didn't finish the second round on time. And one of my guys was missing the cut Thomas Dietrich, who I had as my captain. So they were coming back for like 20 minutes. It was like four players left to play one hole. And that meant there was going to be like a 10-minute gap at, I think, 6 a.m. Irish time to change your team.
Okay.
So I set my alarm for 6 a.m. on Saturday morning to change my team. Now, the chances of me ever winning this are slim and none. Like, there's about 30,000 people in it.
But right. So it's like it's not just like your friends.
This is all of anyone. You can play.
Yeah.
We'll set up for the next, they do it in swings.
I can't do that. I'm telling you, I don't have the capability. I just run out of steam so quickly. But I admire you for doing it. I admire the passion you retain.
I've just checked there. I'm doing very, very well in Qatar this week. I have Patrick Reed and Daniel Hillier both tied for the lead. That's good picking right there.
You're killing it, man. Your Green Asylum, you're in second place, the first ever maximum.
I'm very busy in my new job. My new job. That's the main thing that we need to get out of.
You're going to be fired after the show.
I've got a real focus in life right now. Like, I was like, sorry, why did you set your alarm on Saturday morning? A thing for work. I wanted to just double check. Yes.
It kind of is for work for you. Look, you're taking it into this podcast.
I am. And look, we've just got 3 minutes content. So anyways, I'm delighted to be in the running. What's the prize, by the way,
It's a lot. I think it might be like $500. So,
Nice. I haven't paid to enter yet is the only problem.
97 Irish punts, I believe.
97 Irish punts. Yeah, I haven't paid yet, so I'm a bit worried. I need to get the money over quick before it starts looking dodgy.
No, you shouldn't say that. The Green Asylum people are going to hear this. I've kept it quiet for you. I've protected you.
Thanks.
Only protect you so much.
Gentleman Jack asks, what does Shane think of Liv getting world ranking points? Seems like they're still non-conforming in a number of OWGR categories, qualification, etc. So why does he think they've bent over backwards to accommodate them?
Well, that's a funny perspective to have if you saw Liv's statement, right? Where they're very upset, obviously, at the... It's like a lot of things in golf lately, Nathan. I think it's kind of the funniest and least satisfying outcome to everybody, where, you know, the PGA Tour would have preferred that Liv got no points, I'm sure. Liv would have preferred that they got points that, were commensurate with what they think their level is. And instead they got ranking points that put them at like maybe a very low level DP World Tour event, or maybe even lower than that. And so they're pissed. They don't like it. I thought their social media post on it was sort of whiny, sort of petty. I mean, for somebody who they've wanted these points for so long, they finally got some. But now they're just like, oh, well, this is stupid because nobody outside of the top 10 gets points. That's not fair. So I don't know. I think it's like this sort of a compromise solution that pleases nobody. Mm. And in that sense, I thought it was very funny. I really did think it was very funny. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're happy. And as far as this question, do they deserve it? I mean, they are 72 holes now. The shotgun start is gone. At least for the final rounds, it's sort of more of an open shop, vaguely. Yeah, it's I don't know. So it,
well, one
it
of
kind
the
of
things
feels
that World Ranking pointed out was obviously that they are now going down a different, which I think at the start of Liv we all felt might be a way for them to go, which was down the nationality route, and that's a way for the teams to work.
Yeah,
but because of that, it counts against them in this because they're going, well, actually, you could be 30th ranked player, but we might just get rid of you because we've decided we're going to have a Japanese team and we wanted a Japanese player in there. So sorry about that. Meritocracy thrown out the window. You're fired. And there is no, I have no sympathy for them just because they knew what they were getting into when they left. And whether they were promised this or that, the top players, doesn't really matter. It always looked unlikely they were going to get world ranking points. It does just, rather than enhance the world rankings again, it does feel as though it makes it even more of a mess.
Like, it totally does. Yeah.
And maybe it will work out like this. I think all you really want from Liv world ranking points is that if somebody is particularly dominant, that's reflected in the world rankings. So if you win three or four times in a season, you should probably be a top 5-6 player in the world. It really doesn't feel like Justin Rose is the third best player in the world right now. Now, maybe that's been very harsh on him. And he obviously put the body of work in there. But, and I understand, in a way, Liv's frustration when so many of the signature events are 70 players. It's a restricted field. They're bloody hard to get into. But
yeah,
I don't know. Sympathy is in very short supply. And they're just always whiny and moaning. No matter what happens, always. No matter what you give them, it's always going to be everyone's out to get us.
Yeah, well, that's the only thing they have left. Well, it may have been all they ever had, except money. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. Speaking of all this, a friend posed this trivia question to me yesterday, Nathan. I'll give it to you.
Oh, no.
Five LIV teams where all members are from the same country, and all five are different countries. Korean Golf Club is not one of them, crazy enough. Can you name the five countries? I'm not going to ask you to name the teams.
Australia.
Yep.
Japan?
No.
Oh, England.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's a USA team that has...
There is, yeah. There's an American team. That's number three. There. Yep, you got two
South
more.
South Africa?
Yes.
Ooh, so it's not Japan, not South Korea. There's not an all-German... Is there an all-Spanish team?
You got it. Good job. Yeah. Five for six. You know, one X, but you had one to give. So
I will take that. Turned this into a quiz and fantasy sports podcast, and maybe everybody would be a lot happier. Another LIV question from Highside Past. Having watched my first bit of LIV under floodlights, how long does Shane think golf in that format, floodlights, shotgun, no atmosphere, is sustainable?
But it's not sustainable. That's the thing, right? Financially, if you were dealing with normal people putting their money on the line that didn't want to lose it, it would have been unsustainable from the get-go. So sustainable is like, if you're asking how long can LIV last, you're asking about the sustainability of both the PIF and their will to do it. You're
and
not
that's
asking
starting
about
to be questioned as well over the last weeks and months that they are cutting back on a lot of projects and the... narrative, and wasn't a narrative if there's a massive amount of truth in it, that was there when LIV was starting, that there's a bottomless pit of Saudi money. It doesn't really feel like that's the case right now.
If you had, let's say you had $1 million, Nathan, you were a millionaire, or €1 million or punts.
We haven't had punts, just to be clear, we haven't had punts in Ireland, Shane, for 25 years.
I know. I remember, this is ridiculous, but I remember there was a page in the newspaper that did the currency exchanges when I was a kid, and punts were always very strong. They were like with the pound, always stronger than the dollar. So I just remember that forever. And also because it's a weird name as a kid. You're like, oh, it's a punt. Interesting. Okay, so imagine you had €1 million, and what's the equivalent of 5 billion? 5 billion is like 5% of a trillion, right? So whatever the equivalent would be, like something like $50,000. You spent that and lost it. You'd be like, oh, it's fine, I got $1 million. But you'd still kind of be like, I don't really want to spend another 50,000, right? Or even if it was 5,000, which may be the accurate thing. You'd be like, okay, I lost 5,000, but I'm not going to keep doing this, right? Even though I have $1 million, I'm not just going to endlessly lose. And this is all I have. I only have this $1 million. And the 5,000 I'm losing is on a prototype of a Nerf football. You know what I mean? It's like something stupid that you're like, doesn't work. It's not working clearly. So, yes, it's not sustainable in any real sense, I don't think. It's just a matter of how stubborn the Saudis want to be.
Yeah, and the feeling was that if you were the millionaire losing the 5 or 50,000, that Saudi actually, it didn't really matter because they'd another million coming in next week and another million coming in the week after that.
Yeah.
And again, maybe not the case, and maybe their priorities are shifting. And also, from a pure business point of view, eventually you go, what are we, okay, they're saving face, and there's also just throwing good money after bad. And it does feel, from the world ranking conversation this week, Bryson's comments were interesting. Obviously getting some good advice in terms of, this is your chance, Bryson, maybe to become golf's second ever billionaire.
You
have got these guys by the balls. And the fact that it feels as though Patrick Reed, Brooks Koepka might be the start of a conveyor belt returning. So I don't know. What's the chances of LIV been there in 5 years? 50-50 at best?
Yeah, I think so. It's also interesting when you're like, Bryson does have that chance, but it's like in a year, even that chance feels like it'll be less, right? It's like he probably wants to renegotiate now. almost the iron is really hot right now while LIV still has some sense of like, we want to keep doing this.
Question for Shane in from The Beard. Xander has just lost his missed cut streak. It includes a load of tournaments that there were no cuts. Scotty's on a run as well on the same basis. Point is, it's all a load of bollocks. Is it not?
Yeah, in the era of the signature event, it's more bollocks than it used to be. Tiger's huge one was really impressive. But yeah, now it's a little different. Now when you're like, well, now you would have to adjust the standard to say he's made the cut in X straight events where there actually is a cut. Hopefully they do that. I don't know if they do. But yeah, if they're just grouping signature events into it, that's silly.
It is one of the frustrations of LIV and the post-LIV golfing world is that it is really screwed with stats and historical reference points. Mm-hmm. That while there is no official asterisk after anything, there's kind of a little asterisk after everything now, because again, you know, Scotty's run on the PGA Tour, he's not beating John Rahm, he's not beating Bryson DeChambeau, he's not beating the best of the best every week, the way that Tiger had to. And the fact there's no cuts, the pressure that comes with that, if you're in, it seems impossible to get out. That, yeah, a lot of the graphics that appear from a historical point of view now on your TV, you're like, yeah, well, that's not really as impressive as it looks.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's
like John Rahm finished top 10 in every LIV event.
Yeah, okay, great.
Well done, John. Well done.
Yeah.
Not per profit. I don't know if you saw this video of Patrick Harrington on the European Tour social. So Patrick Harrington's making his 500th European Tour appearance this week. And they did one of those things where they said, don't speak until you see somebody who's better than you. And it was, don't speak until you see somebody who's better than you with their short game. And they basically went through all the greatest golfers of all time. And Patrick never said anything. To the extent when it finished, I thought he was going to go, sorry, what was I meant to do? But I should never never underestimate the great man, who then went on to speak for about 8 minutes as to just why he feels he has the greatest short game of all time. And actually, if you look statistically, him at his worst is better than most people at their very best. So, not for profits wondering, is Patrick just uber confident, deluded, showing his age, or did he have the best short game out of all those names that were listed?
I haven't seen that. It sounds absolutely delightful. I can't believe I've missed it. I love any Patrick Harrington video. He also has the best vocal tick ever, which is like, like the kind of extended thing he does all the time.
Well, you should listen to on my radio station now on Today FM. There's this sort of comedy sketch every morning called Gift Grub. Why am I not saying that? I'm not allowed to say that. Where it's all about impersonations, and when Patrick Harrington was at his peak, Patrick Harrington would be on a lot, but he would basically, he would do the sound effect of a reversing van.
Okay.
It's funnier in person.
Yeah, I would like that. No, Patrick's great. I mean, he's like, his videos are fun to watch, and people in America love them. People are like, praise them constantly, but they don't, I almost feel like probably in Ireland you have a better appreciation of the comedy of those videos, because they're like, they just go on and on and on. I mean, it's just, he's great at that, but he's a great talker and he always makes good points. And he is awesome, right? I mean, this is like, but I remember seeing a video once where he talked about his swing speed and was just talking about how impressive it was for his age that he still had his swing speed. It's like, it is. It like genuinely is so impressive that you still have that swing speed. But just the openness with which you brag about it. It's like hearing your dad talk, right? It's like my dad is, just, they don't have that layer of irony. They're just that generation above us that like the layer of self-deprecation or the need to feel like you self-deprecate. So it's like, oh, it's just my uncle bragging about how good he was at basketball in high school. It's just great. It's just fantastic. Plus he's very smart and very insightful. So
it does also show in maybe something not what he was intending, which is why he was so great and why he was so successful, is he has this ridiculous level of confidence. Ridiculous level of confidence isn't the right turn of phrase, because he was clearly brilliant at so many parts of his game. But whereas we had the self-deprecating Irish thing of, oh, he's over there playing with Tiger Woods in the final round, he can't believe his luck that he's out there on the big stage. Mm-hmm. He's like, no. I very much feel at home. I feel like I belong here. I feel like I have the golf game.
Yeah, and you need that. I mean, every golfer needs it. You have to be delusional almost, right? We always talk about the thing, like when people, you know, the really great players, every time they miss a putt, they're looking at some spot in the green, like, you know, the universe just put the most bizarre little impediment.
Jack Nicklaus saying he never three-putted in his life.
Yeah, I would never have, like, yeah, I never would have missed that if under normal circumstances. It had to be something extraordinary. You need that kind of crazy belief. Unlike us, where we make a 7-foot putt and we're like, oh!
That'll never happen again.
Oh my God, yeah.
Neil B. asks, was watching Paddy's video about his short game. What player does Shane think was missing just one part of his game that held him back from being a great player? So if Brian Campbell could hit it 30 yards further off the tee, would he be a top 10 player in the world?
Let's not go crazy with Brian Campbell. It's a fantastic question. I like not looking at these, as I've told you before, because I like playing it off the cuff. I think it's more fun. This is one where I wish I had looked at it. It'd be a great topic for an article, just an all-time, like, you know, if you could give this guy this one thing. I just think of somebody like Denny McCarthy, who is the world's most talented putter.
So will I help you out here? Because I'm really interested. People on Discord, put your thoughts in as to just what you think is the answer from, again, we touched on it last week, of sort of what commentators say about certain players, that they're not good at this, or, you know, Victor Hovland has a terrible short game, but actually, you know, maybe Victor Hovland in comparison to, you know, your average Joe's just fine. But if he was just a bit better, he'd be world number one instead of world number 10. So looking at the overall numbers, Shane, again, if you go back to Scotty puts just fine. Like, you gained 27 strokes, which is pretty much the exact same as Fleetwood and McIlroy, but his strokes gained, tee to green. So the rest of his game, you know, 170 strokes gained. Tommy Fleetwood was second at 80. Sam Burns, as I mentioned, bit of an outlier. Putting a bit more inconsistent for an awful lot of players. But if you're looking at the rest of their game, so off the tee and approach play, as I said, Sam Burns more or less breaking even. Garrick Higgo more or less breaking even. The first player to lose strokes is your mate, Denny McCarthy, who gains 55 shots on the green, but the rest of his game lost 7 shots. So again, if he could improve his golf, which again, you're right, feels more difficult. If you're Denny McCarthy, you're like, right, I'm maybe not the greatest driver of the ball and my iron play isn't as accurate, but I'm going to hole everything. It's a bit of a get out, but again, it's a real outlier to not have a good all-round game and just to be a red-hot putter. So Christian Bezednut, Sam Ryder, great putter, lost nearly 20 shots with the rest of his game. So again, there's a lot of guys, if they fixed one part, would suddenly, and that is how it works in golf. So you've got the guys who are relentlessly consistent, Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood, Scottie Scheffler, and then you have the guys who probably have their 18 month, and what they do in that 18 month is they keep doing the stuff they've always done really well, and they just fix something. Like Dustin Johnson turning up one day going, oh yeah, I did a bit of practice over the winter.
It's a great, those are great stats. You did it.
I did your job for you.
You did my job for me. The thing that impresses me about the Denny McCarthy's of the world is that putting is supposed to be the most variable year to year. And he's always there. It's crazy how always there he is. But it is funny when you're like, oh man, you're always below average in tee to green. And a lot of that's just distance. But also it's like when you're like strokes gained approach is less, all of that. You're like, man, I don't know what the answer is. Like, it's like, I'm sure they work really, really hard and this is as good as they can get. So that's cool. You know, it's a pretty good career. It's a pretty good career anyway.
Yeah, they're all doing all right. Yeah, I'll just check. What I want from the listeners is more the sort of assumption of who's good and who's bad at things. And if they fixed it, suddenly they'd be an absolute world beater. So Sam Burns, last year on tour, Sam Burns was the best putter on tour. And wow, was he the best putter on tour. 82 strokes gained putting.
Crazy.
Second place was Taylor Montgomery, 47. Wow.
So you know what's annoying, and maybe data golf is the answer, but it's annoying to me that you can't look at one spreadsheet where you have strokes gained off the tee, approach, putting, tee to green, and around the green, all in one place in a table that you can sort. I mean, every other sport has this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Mm. So that frustrates me that I can't get to that right now. But
I think data golf have a bit of that. They certainly make it a lot easier. Okay. They definitely make it easier than the official PGA Tour website. Sorry, I probably confused everyone there with just a lot of numbers and a lot of stats. But yeah, let us know if you think, who's the guy, if you could just get him one good lesson at the right time, could just transform his game. This is like me when I go to the range in the spa well, and you can do this sort of 30-shot challenge on the top tracer. And at the end of it, it sort of gives you, you know, where you're hitting the ball in relation to your handicap. And my iron shots and my wedge play is always like 13, and my driver is 42. And I'm like, I see yeah. where the problem is here. I see what's yeah. holding me back.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at the best putters last year. Taylor Montgomery being third, but just lost crazy amounts approaching off the tee. He's the first one that's negative in both, and he's the third best player. And I don't know, where did he finish? Let's look that up, because that's kind of interesting. Of like,
but the ones that, the other ones that stand out are Rory McIlroy, top 10 in putting last year.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Taylor Montgomery. I don't think we've spoken about Taylor Montgomery enough on the podcast before.
No, you need to get way more of him going.
From Las Vegas. So
he finished 152nd. So that shows you how useless it is to be a really good putter. Like a top three putter, but not have any other part of your game. Which we knew. We knew approach is the best thing you can do to correlate to winning and to finishing high in the FedEx Cup. But
drive for show, put for dough, the most inappropriate term and expression in professional golf.
Bullshit. Yep, it's not true.
We've sussed it here today. Final question, Shane, from the beard. Yes. What question would you really like to ask at a Masters press conference but wouldn't dare to?
Yeah, I'd love to ask Fred Ridley, tell me the five things that you would never say to the general public about Augusta. The five secrets you want to keep. That'd be awesome. The answers would be great. I have no idea what they are, but they would be great answers. Like specifically, I would ask about the birds of Augusta, what they do to prevent birds and squirrels, if anything, from being on the ground.
What do you think? There's a dark secret there.
Maybe I've written a whole things about it. We don't know. Maybe there are very few birds for the area, but it's like, how do you keep birds out? Right. That doesn't make much sense.
Never thought about that.
What else? Yeah. What else? I would say, yeah, like what have you had to kick members out for? Right? What have you had to kick members out for? What players have you had to chastise? What really happened? What did you really say to Ballester last year after he peed off the bridge?
I was just going to ask. That would have been a question you might have once asked. What was the worst thing anyone ever did in Ray's Creek? But we know the answer to that.
We hope we know the answer to that.
That's a very fair point.
Yeah. So those are some good ones, you know.
Right. I've never thought about the lack of birds and squirrels previously. So what are they doing to keep the birds and squirrels off Augusta National? Wow. What a cliffhanger to end on. Shane will have the answer next week.
Next week I'll have it for you.
All right, that is us done for the Ryan Line. Get your questions in on the Discord channel, golfweekly@offtheball.com. Damien Delaney was on the main pod this week, Live Lover, bringing balance to the Live discussion with Gary cool. and Fionn. They'll be back on Tuesday. Myself and Shane will be back with you next Thursday. Take it easy. Oh, and tell all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here. Starter kid right here.